Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome, welcome, welcome on this lovely Sunday morning with myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam, Medium Wave 1548 on the Globe Trotting Program. Alhamdulillah, where we talk travel on this lovely, lovely day. And I must tell you, yesterday was quite okay. This morning when I opened my eyes and I looked and I said, oh, what happened today? But it's, well, it was mentioned in the news already that there's snow around the country, so it's going to be a bit chilly. But what a sudden dip in weather. Alhamdulillah. And also, we have the Jor on this weekend. And that, it's extremely cold there. Alhamdulillah, all those that are going there, or going there also, inshallah, make dua for us all. And we'll also be going there shortly after the program. And inshallah, everything goes well there. With the weather being so cold, but inshallah, that makes it even better, because everybody can sit in the tents listening to the bayans. Normally, in the istimas, you would see everybody loitering around, but when it's cold like this, I think this is something good in disguise for everybody to sit in the jor, in the bayans. So, alhamdulillah, inshallah, we'll find the tents choked up with people. Inshallah, Allah make it easy for one and all. And Allah accept all those that are going for the jor also. Allah accept, inshallah. And today being Workers' Day, all those that are working, good luck to you. It is a normal day in life. It's just called the Workers' Day. But you, if you are working, good luck. And also, we've had this mall that opened up this week, during the week. It was chaotic and crazy. It was unreal. I didn't go there, but obviously going past that side, I was in Madrid and I went past that side just to see. Chaotic. Yeah, I haven't seen so much of traffic around a shopping center before, is what I've seen this week. Unreal. And I believe yesterday also some people went through and were telling me it is crazy. The queues in the shops there are snaking. In the mall itself, there's people bumper to bumper. So it is just, well, the specials that they're offering, I presume. And also, secondly, people are just interested in probably seeing what the mall is like and what's it, and to be part of the opening and just to be part of the history of the mall, that we were there the first day or so. Maybe that also. But all those that are going out that side, please be very careful. They're stealing cars, they're robbing people, they're snatching bags and so on from inside the shopping center. So be very, very careful. Obviously, where there's many crowds, we in South Africa, we should expect that where there's many crowds, you would find all these things. So be very, very careful. As you go to such crowded places, you will find these pickpockets. Being in any other shopping center also, just be very wary and be very careful. Very important. Unlike when you're traveling abroad, a lot of times when you travel abroad, the safest place that you'd go to if you are doing any shopping, and they would tell you the safest place to do shopping is to go into a mall, and you can shop there freely without any issues, without any hassles. Unfortunately, South Africa is not like that. They rob shops in the mall and run out, and they get away with it. Unfortunately, it's like that. So we've got to be very, very careful when we go, and we must not keep our guards down. If you are traveling abroad, wherever you go, the most important thing is do not become complacent. Okay, we as South Africans, we have this notion in us that, and we have this phobia of everything getting stolen or being robbed or whatever it is. We must be very careful. And when you go abroad as well, just being more cautious like that is okay. But you have to. Wherever you are, you have to. Irrespective of which country you are going to, we find that even in the Middle Eastern countries now, you're finding that there are robberies taking place, pickpockets. All that is happening. All those things are happening which you never heard of before. So when you're traveling abroad, when you're going anywhere, be very wary, be very careful. You don't have to sit and hold your bag tight in front of you and so on. No. What you do is just be careful. Keep your money separate from your passports and so on. Do not keep all your valuables in one bag and carry it as a knapsack or over your shoulder or whatever it is. Do not do that. Because that is now, you know, even if it's something which is not so tempting, but if you do all that, it becomes tempting to somebody. So just be careful. And also, this money belt is of utmost importance. Lots of people, you find when traveling abroad, they would take their money belts and put it on and put their passports and money in the money belts. Make sure it's tied properly, put it on your waist, underneath your clothing. Try and support it with your pants belt if you can, over it. You know, you like slip it into your pants belt also, with that thing having its own straps. Very important. And I find that to be the safest place to have some of your valuables while moving around. Because there are many countries where you go, you'd find that you'd leave your passports in it in the hotels. Fine. Other countries allow you to just take your passports with you. They do not keep it at the reception. So having your passports with you, I personally, I prefer not to leave passports in hotel rooms. I find it very dangerous. From this, my personal view. I've had experiences with people when traveling abroad, with people also where passports got stolen from hotel rooms. That is why I say, try to keep it on you, in your money belt. Very important that you I would say stash it away, and that's the way to have it. Very, very important to keep that safe. And I always mention, make copies of your passports. Leave copies of your passports at the hotel reception. So if anything does happen, Allah forbid, if anything happens, you do have copies of your passports at the reception, so no running around or whatever it is. And even if your phone gets stolen, you know that you still got copies, hard copies at the hotel. Because what my advice to everybody is before you go, just take a snapshot of your passport and WhatsApp it to somebody close to you who's not with you. That's the safest way of having copies of your passport. So if anything does happen, they can email it back to an email address that you would give them. If you are traveling abroad and if your phone is stolen or whatever, and you have no access to mail from your phone, you can go to any hotel also, and they would allow you to receive the mail, and you can print your passports out. Or if you go to the embassy, they can email it directly to the embassy. So always have hard copies of your passports like that. That is of utmost importance. Talking of that, I find many a times and experiences from people, from listeners, that have lost their stuff. And alhamdulillah, I've had listeners who also called me and said, Jazakallah for telling us so. We lost our bags like so, and that's what happened, and that's what happened, and we kept our passports, and we had copies of our passports, and shukrullah, we managed to get sorted out. So alhamdulillah, things like that also, we try and inform listeners out there. The most important thing is, try and be safe, and try and be one up. When it comes to losing anything also, be one up all the time. Do not leave all your money in one pouch. If you are four or five people traveling, split your money up. I know of people that went and the whole batch of money just disappeared like that. Just got stolen, bags got snatched, money got stolen. What happens? Now you're grappling around for money because your cards were in the bags and your cards are also stolen. Now what? How do you receive money there? Western Union is expensive. So it's difficult like that. That is why it's important that you split your money around. Do not keep all your cards together. If it is so, split your cards also up. All your credit cards and debit cards, whatever you may have, split them up also. So if one bag gets stolen, the rest of them are still intact. You're not totally out. You do have something on hand, and you do have something to fall back on. So inshallah, that's just a piece of advice from me, inshallah. If you went traveling, that is something that we observe all the time when it comes to traveling. Like I mentioned some time back also, we were in Italy, and there was a couple from a family from Australia who were with us, and we were told, do not leave your bags, your handbags at the table. Do not leave it on the table. Do not leave it on the floor. Do not leave it on the floor. We tend to have this notion that we'll keep it on the floor, we'll keep our legs close to it like that, and nothing will happen. Believe me, you lose that concentration in 1 minute, and that is that 1 minute where you'll find these gypsies coming in, pulling your bag out from underneath the chair, and it's gone. And it happened to this family, and they were devastated simply because money, passports, all contact information, whatever they had, all in one bag. And one person, the father of the house, was carrying that bag, and everything just vanished in a matter of minutes or seconds, I would say. And we realized, and we saw thereafter, the gypsies walked into the breakfast area, and they come in with those long robes of theirs, and they just pulled the bag. Nobody saw them. And it's unreal how nobody can see them. We are a whole lot of us and nobody saw them. But that's what happens. So be very, very, very careful. So inshallah, just as a protection, try, Allah protects most. But we got to take that initiative a little bit, inshallah. And Allah will make it easy for us, inshallah. Now, today I want to talk about the 20 little known countries that you would visit. There's close on 200 countries in this world. And there are some countries which we never heard of. But those countries are countries to go to. Now we find the stereotype, and we all are stereotyped. We tend to have 5-6 destinations that we go to, and that's it. We just go to the five or six destinations and that's it. We wouldn't think of exploring further. But those that would like to go out and explore, my advice is there are so many countries to go to that you would never think that somebody would go to countries like that. It may be small countries with population of 20, 50, 100,000 people. But for 3 days, 2 days, 4 days, while you are in or on your way to other major countries, pop in, stop around there, check the country out, visit the country, see, look at the culture of the people, what type of people, which definitely you would find one or two Muslims there, meet up with them, from there you continue to your destination. That is a good way of traveling, because you're not making it a holiday at the destination which you are totally unsure of. You are just bypassing. So what you do, you spend 2-3 days, check the place out. So if it is something which is not your cup of tea, you know that you spend 2 days there and you continue from there. So that is the way to probably do some new countries as you're visiting around the world. Now, before we start with the 20 countries, I received something very, very, very interesting from somebody this week, and I'd like to just read it out. It's very short though, and it makes so much of sense. We tend to talk of other people. We tend to talk ill of other people. Why? On assumption. Because we assume that when we saw this person, this is what I saw, or that, you know, things like that. Something so interesting, and it was so thought-provoking, and said, you know, it's something which we should implement. It says, a lady sat next to a taxi driver while all the seats were empty in the back. Now, as a person that would see the taxi driver, what would they think? That she's sitting in front next to the taxi driver. In your mind, place it that she's the wife of the taxi driver. Give him the benefit of the doubt. Then you have another one. A man with a long beard walks past a masjid while the people were making salah. And he didn't enter to make salah. But you saw him going past the masjid. And what would you say? Naturally, what would you say? Look at that uncle. Look at that chacha. He's going past the masjid. Long kurta, long beard, all he's not making namaz. That uncle, in your mind, now, you may have not known that, but that uncle, he had made his salah already in another masjid where the time of salah sets in immediately after adhan. He makes his salah, and he made his salah, and he had work to do, so he probably continued. And when he came past that masjid, that adhan was going on. Like in lands, we have so many masjids, and that's what happened. Benefit of the doubt. And then you sit next to someone and you say, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. But they don't reply to you again. Easy. Think of it this way. They probably didn't hear you. Now, another one. A friend from college declines an invitation to go out for coffee. Don't say why he didn't want to go out for coffee. He's probably miserly or something. Think like this. He's not miserly, but he sees how much sweat his father puts into his work in order to send him some money every month to go to college or go to university, whatever it may be. So look at it that way. Most of the time, we only see part of the picture. So imagine the rest of the picture in a positive way, in order not to wrong others. Think good about other people, and you will be at ease. One of the righteous people said, if I see someone with alcohol dripping from his beard, then I'll say perhaps it spilled on him. And if I see him on top of a mountain saying, I am your Lord Most High, then I'll say he's reciting an ayat from the Quran. He's not saying that he's God. Benefit of the doubt. One of the righteous people said, by Allah, it's already difficult for the slave to know his full intention when doing anything. So how can he go about taking hold of other people's intentions? We don't know what's the intention of people. Always give excuses for other people and think good about them and say perhaps he has an excuse that we don't know what the excuse is all about. So let us think good of people. We tend to have this assumption. It hasn't happened to me. Please, I'm not telling for any. I'm not saying because anything has happened to me now. It came across to me this week. A friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, sent it to me. Came across to me and I thought I'll just read it out. Because this is reality. These things do happen. We as insan, as human beings, we also have that in our minds. And we think about these things. And it comes to our mind as clean as we want to be. We are insan, and we think about this. But now, going forward, when we think about these things, let us think about what we just spoke of now. And inshallah, if that happens, Allah makes it easy for us, and Allah praises us for whatever we have done right in thinking good of the next person. And Allah bring goodness into our hearts, inshallah. So Allah make it easy for us, for one and all. And also let us not look at the outside. Like we see many a time, we'll see these beggars standing on the corner, and we'll assume that this one, he's got such a nice pants on, why is he begging? Or he's got that bottle there, I think there's glue in the bottle, and he's smoking glue, because I see there's a bottle with a packet there in the corner where he's sitting. Let us not assume, let us not do all that, and let us, you know, we mustn't, when we see these people also, we mustn't feel that, why must we give them, why must we do this, why, you know, Allah provides for Allah provides for everybody. So who are we to judge and say we don't want to give this one or we don't want to give that one? If we feel we don't want to give, just, you know, if you don't have, just shake your hands, sorry, and next time. If you do have the next time, even if it's a 10 or a 20 cents, just give it to them. What they do with it, it's up to them. Let us not be judges for those people. Now, to continue, we are going to be talking about 20 little known countries that you should visit, that when you want to go for a destination to a major country, stop over, because these 20 countries that I'm going to mention are spread across the globe. So you can use them as springboards going to another major country. And visit these countries, maybe some good come out of them, inshallah. But we'll start with that right after the news. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back. If you just joined us, you're listening to myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam Medium Wave 1548 on this lovely Sunday morning. Lovely, lovely, cool weather, alhamdulillah. So just take a breather, relax, chill out. We can see what's going to happen this winter. Oh, it's going to be nice and cool. Inshallah, it's weather which we can bear. Which, in South Africa, we're quite okay. We don't have so bad winters. And it's not so cold. We have just probably a couple of days which are extremely cold. But more than that, alhamdulillah, lovely weather. Shukr alhamdulillah. You know, I was talking to somebody week before last, I think. And they say, in the UK especially, that their winters, they don't even have a day of sunlight, not even a little peeking of sunlight. We must say shukr to the Almighty that in winters we have sunshine, great sunlight coming out, alhamdulillah. So we make shukr to the Almighty for that. Allah has blessed us with good weather in South Africa, and I think we have one of the best weathers throughout the world, where we have four seasons, we have lovely weather, so we can have that cold and the hot, unlike the tropical countries where you'll just have hot and humid, warm weathers. We have both. And then you have up north or down south, you have further cold weathers, only cold. We have across the board, alhamdulillah. Shukr. As I mentioned before the news, there's 20 little known countries that you should visit, which we tend to oversee, and we overlook those countries and say, you know what, who wants to go there? But it can be a destination of choice. The first country that we'll talk of, I'll tell you, there had been somebody that went, and they were just taken aback and said, I'm going back again, and they went back again. It's like that. You wouldn't know until you get there and see, and you'd probably love the place and go back if you have to, and for a longer period of time. Many people have heard of countries like France, Dubai, Spain, Italy, and you have the UK, you have Australia, all that. And many dream of going there, or some of them have been there already. But if you're looking to blaze your own trail and explore hidden gems, then these are the perfect countries to visit, which I'm going to mention shortly. Some of these countries are difficult to get into, but once you're in, you will get a totally unique cultural and geographic experience. It's not marketed and it's not explored by the world. Why? Because it doesn't have the tons of shopping centers, or it doesn't have the infrastructure of what a first world country has, with all these modern gateways and so on. But it's a country of it's a destination of choice, or on a different level, and you may enjoy the country and want to go back again. First one being Kyrgyzstan. And I know personally somebody that went to Kyrgyzstan, came back and said, I'm going back to Kyrgyzstan. It is a country which I cannot believe how beautiful it is there. The capital is Bishkek, Bishkek. The currency that they use there is Kyrgyzstani som. Your population in Kyrgyzstan is give and take 6 million people. The neighboring countries of Kyrgyzstan is Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and you have China on the one side. Their official language, because it was part of the former USSR, the official language is Russian, or they speak Kyrgyz, that is the one of their official languages. So they have two languages there. It's located in Central Asia. It's a country that sits between China and Kazakhstan and has a stunningly beautiful landscape with a rich nomadic tradition. One of the most beautiful places to visit in the country is Lake Sericelac, which is wedged within a lush green valley. Now, all these pictures, views that you see there when you go to a country, when you see on the net, you find all these lovely pictures where you'll find the sun setting on a lake, and you'll find a tree maybe somewhere on the one side where the sunlight is, the shadow of the tree falls on the water. Beautiful picturesque views like that are in countries like these, which we tend to oversee. And it is a small landlocked country and has a long history of semi-autonomy. They eventually gained their independence in 1991 with the dissolution of the USSR, because they were under the USSR, Soviet Russia. They were together all the time. The best time to visit is between July and September. They are above the equator, so obviously your weathers are warmer on that side. Otherwise, you're going to have heavy rains and you're going to have freezing temperatures, which are closer towards November, December, January, February. So the best time is July to September. The Kyrgyz culture is based on nomadic traditions that harkens back to the days of Mongol hordes. Although modern Kyrgyz people live mainly in houses or apartment buildings in the summertime, it is still possible to observe the native people living in a yurt. Now, a yurt is a portable round tent covered with skins. That is, it's a homemade thing, with their herds of sheep, goats, horses, and occasionally even yaks. There are a number of yurt camps that cater to tourists in every oblast. Some of the most notable and remote are the Tesh Rabat, the House of Stones, in Naren Oblast, or past Naren City, in Chetty Oguz, which is called the Seven Bulls. That's a valley which is near the city of Karakol on Lake Issyk-Kul. Now, you have these, when you are here, and when you go to a place like this, and if you're not staying in a 5 or a 7 star or a 6 star or a 4 star hotel, whatever it may be, in the comfort, you do get them there, obviously. But to live and to go into these camps and to stay like that, I think that would be the most adventurous holiday you can have. Obviously, if you're not going with little children, and if you're going as a couple or you're going as a whole group of adults, that would be lovely to do. You can do it if you want to. You do it for a day, and if you find that it's good enough, you stay on for the rest of your stay in that particular camp, and that would be lovely. I myself would love to do that and enjoy staying just like that. You obviously have, they have shower facilities, they will have shower facilities, they'll have ablution facilities and so on in the camps. So that will be okay. But to stay in a tent like that overnight, in South Africa we can't do that. So let us go and let's explore that and stay in. It's a tent. It's a round tent. Let me put it to you. Picture this here. It's a round tent that's got wooden pillars coming from the top, from the peak, making a roof. And around the sides you have like thin little sticks right around that makes a full circle. And on that, they've got skins which is stretched from the top to the edge of the roof, and from the top of the walls, the so-called walls, to the bottom, and nailed down to the bottom, or clipped to the bottom, or held down to the bottom of the sticks. And that is your tent that you have. So you can imagine how simple that is. You have one little door which is made of skin, slit it open, get into there, and you've got your mattress, so you've got your, if you're sleeping on blankets on the floor, if you're used to that, that would be nice to sleep in, to have your sleeping bag maybe also, that would be nice to do as a rough it up holiday. And we have the tendency of doing our posh holidays all the time. These are adventurous holidays, and there are people. Last year we had a group that we spoke of, one of the countries it slips my mind, and they told me, listen, we're changing our destination, or we're changing our holiday, but and we're adding that country there, and we're going to rough it up, and we do that. And when they came back, they came back with information to me. I was just taken aback and said, Alhamdulillah, what a lovely holiday. We mentioned it and you did it. That is something beautiful. And they had a lovely time. Shukar Alhamdulillah. And that is something which you'll never forget. because it's not a conventional holiday that you'd go for. Now, the Kyrgyz women produce a variety of handicrafts created out of felt, including slippers, bags, decorative panels, traditional hats known as kalpaks, and colorful carpets called shirdaks. These carpets are made in a variety of sizes, from foot by foot size to several yards in length. Shirdaks come in a wide variety of traditional patterns. The Kyrgyz favor brightly colored ones, often combining bright red and green. More subtly hued shirdaks made for foreign customers can be found in Bishkek, which is the main city, often for a slightly higher price than the more traditional carpets you'd find in the village areas. And Narain Oblast is widely considered the home of the best shirdak makers in the country. There are several cooperatives where it is possible to commission works, especially if you want these particular things. So this is the handicrafts that they make. You get other stuff. Kyrgyzstan is not primitive. It is a modern city. It's an oil wealth country also, so you would get something great out there. But it's a country which people haven't really, really visited. Then you have, which also another listener had contacted me, finding out how they could get there. We needed to get some information, and alhamdulillah, we assisted them, and they got to Brunei. Now, Brunei, the capital of Brunei is Bandar Seri Begawan. The currency that they use is Brunei dollar. The population is give and take about 500,000 people. Their official language that they speak is Malay. Now, in South Africa, there is no embassy for Brunei. I would tell you that simply because we made the inquiry, we did what we had to do, we did our homework, because these people wanted to go to Brunei and we had to do our homework, and alhamdulillah, we've got all the information what was required, and they managed to get in and how to get there also. They had to go to Malaysia, and from Malaysia, they went to the Brunei office there and they got all the details from there, and it made it so much easier. They got their visa sorted out there, and from there they went into Brunei, and they had a roaring time, alhamdulillah. It was something which was very different, and they managed to get to Brunei. So that is why Brunei is one of the countries which, because of the way to get there, people find it a bit difficult. They find it a schlep, and they would say that they don't want to go there because of that, but make it a point and go there. Now, Brunei, on the island of Borneo, it's a small little country, and it is located on the north coast and surrounded by Malaysia in the South China Sea. It's known for its beaches and biodiverse rainforest. Much of it is protected within reserves. The Ulu Terengganu, which you'll hear the names also, is part of Malaysia. So the Ulu Terengganu National Park, accessed by a long boat. Now, if you picture those long boats you get, those boats that you have, it's quite thin and long, and the two sides, the back and the front, are, how can I say, designed up where it's carved out to the top, and it's got like a curl on the top. Those are the type of boats you're going to sit in, and you're going to cross off with those type of boats. So how beautiful is that? Like, you know, in Venice when we were there, all those boats that you go in, going from one place to another in Venice. Beautiful. What an amazing journey. What an amazing holiday. And what an amazing experience when you are with those canoe-type boats and they're riding away, they're paddling away, and you're sitting in the middle of that boat and you're just looking at the water on the left and on the right. How beautiful is that? Now, that is what you'd find in Brunei. And you'll find that these long boats is what you access the park with these long boats. And it affords canopy walks, glimpses of traditional longhouse culture, and endemic fauna and flora, such as the proboscis monkey. Brunei is ruled by a king whose family has ruled the country for the past 6 centuries. The cultural apex was between the 15th and the 16th centuries, when they controlled large coastal areas. Brunei subsequently entered a period of decline brought on by internal strife over royal succession, which is normal, colonial expansion of European powers, and piracy, unfortunately. In about 1888, Brunei became a British protectorate, and it was offered the opportunity to join Malaysia as a state in 1963, but opted out of the federation due to a disagreement on the amount of its oil income that would have to be given to the central government in Kuala Lumpur. And their independence was achieved in 1984. It is also a home to 9 mountain peaks that range from about, I would say about 300 meters right up to about 1500 meters, 1600 meters. And many, many forest reserves for the hiker and the adventurer. Now there are many people that go for tours, and they go and they do these hiking trails, and they do all these fancy little tours into the country, which is beautiful to do, which is amazing to do, which I've just done now one in Malaysia, and that is, the hiking trail is about the best that you can do. And you just have to rough it up. Go with your dirty shoes, go with real, real clothes which you don't want to, which you feel if it really gets so badly messed up that sometimes you just got to just leave it aside. You go to some of the places for trails like that, and that is adventurous, and that's what I love to do, where you have steep mountains, you have steep dips, and it is amazing, where you have your adrenaline pumping all the way going up to the top of the mountain and coming back into your with the trails. Beautiful, beautiful. That is beautiful. While you're visiting Brunei, you can catch a baseball game at Sultan Hassan al-Bolkiah Stadium, or spend part of your day checking out the Malay Technology Museum. If you'd like to visit the country, the best times to go are between October and February. Their weathers are quite good there, and the rest of the year is hot and humid. Now, October to February, you get warm temperatures in the region of about 20, plus minus 20 degrees Celsius, which is okay, which we can really make do with, and it's not cold for us. So you can enjoy with that type of weather. And with over two-thirds of its population being Muslim, Brunei is ruled according to the national philosophy of the Malay Islamic monarchy, intertwining Malay traditions with Islam and deep-rooted respect for the nation's monarchy. Bruneians practice a devout but tolerant Islam. They are not extremists. They are tolerant in whatever they do. Like Malaysia also. They are, you know, they practice what has to be done. Alhamdulillah. And that is the people of Brunei. Obviously, being on the same region, it would be similar, very much similar. And that encompasses sincere respect and devotion, while still remaining open to other faiths and beliefs. They do allow other faiths also in the country. It's not strictly Muslims. Brunei is officially an Islamic state, with hundreds of large, beautiful masjids. Now, there's a masjid in Malaysia also, which is built by the Sultan of Brunei. It's a blue-roofed masjid, because the Sultan at the time loved blue, the color blue. So he made that masjid's roof also blue, but a huge masjid. And that's from a distance you can see just the blue roof. And that's what was built in Malaysia as a gift from Brunei. Now, in Brunei itself, you'd find that there are lots and lots of beautiful masjids across the country. The sale of alcohol is totally banned in Brunei. Bringing in meat other than seafood, which has not been certified halal, is also banned. You're only allowed halal meat in that country. So if you're going to Brunei, you are sure to get halal. All the meats that's slaughtered there also is according to our Islamic rites of halal, and it's done the correct way. So all your meats are halal. Like I said, they do not allow any meat to come in which is not slaughtered the halal way. Then during Ramadan, many of the shops and restaurants will open. However, eating, drinking, or smoking in front of people who are fasting is considered rude, and asking permission is appropriate. In about 2014, a new law had been passed by the government where non-fasting people only allowed to take out foods from all restaurants and eat it privately, not eat it in public. This was due to the respect that was given to the holy month of Ramadan. The bulk of the population is Malay, which is 67% of the population, and there is also a significant Chinese minority of about 15%. And there are a number of indigenous people also, including the Dusun tribes who inhabit the jungle upriver in the Temburong district, the smaller eastern part detached from the rest of Brunei. There's a large number of foreign workers who work on the oil and gas production, or in positions such as restaurant staff, field workers, and domestic staff. The male to female ratio is 3-2. More than a quarter of the people are short-term immigrant workers, most of whom are men. Modern scholars date the spread of Islam to Brunei Darussalam to the late 13th century. Prior to this, ancient Malay culture was based on animistic and Indic culture. Islam gradually eroded these elements, and thus today Malay culture is now more identifiable with Islam. When you see the way they dress, the way they do things, Malay culture is very much Islamic also. You'd find that. Visitors to Brunei will see that Islamic influence form a central foundation of the nation's heritage. As Islam is the foundation for the life of the average Bruneian, many of the nation's cultural practices and customs are intrinsically linked with Islam and with religion. Aesthetically, Islam introduced important architectural features such as the ubiquitous masjids and the art styles such as the tile mosaics seen throughout the nation. Other culturally enriching additions include the use of Jawi script, the abundance of religious texts, and even foods and cooking styles. Very much Islamic. So Brunei is a country of choice also to go to. If you're going to Malaysia, you'd go to the office and get your visas there. From there, it's a hop off to Brunei, not a long distance. You can go there for 2 or 3 days max if you want to and enjoy yourself there. Go visit these places. You know, it's the thing is, when we go out and we go to these conventional countries that we go to, which we find we go to, like I say, anybody you dear, now I'm going to Dubai or things like that. And, you know, it's go to these other countries and visit. Go check it out. It's you probably fall in love with those countries for the beauty that they offer, for what they have. And being a Muslim country also, let's go there with the intention of getting that country built up, inshallah. With every dollar that goes in from a foreigner builds up the country. Only South Africa thinks otherwise, but the rest of the world thinks that way. Foreigners or visitors that come in, they welcome visitors. They spend their money, and that makes a difference in all all factors and all spheres of that particular country. And they do it. They create tourism. And that's what they do. And they ask for tourism. So in places like this, let us go. Like I said, unlike South Africa, which we just got the sports ban that came across now. With the sports ban, how much more are we going to lose? Because there's just too much to lose. But anyway, it's happening in South Africa. So foreigners are probably not so welcome here. That's what we can see. And that's what's happening. But unfortunately, that's the way it is. Inshallah, Allah changes their hearts and make things different, where we can get lots of people coming in. And this country will improve, inshallah, with all these foreigners coming in, tourists coming in, and making changes to this country. Inshallah, it will happen. Then we have a country called Vanuatu. Vanuatu's capital is Port Vila. The currency is Vanuatu Vatu. The population is give and take between 270 to 300,000 people. The neighboring countries you have is Fiji, New Caledonia, Australia, New Zealand, Solomon Islands, and their official language is Vislima, English, and French. And it is a South Pacific Ocean nation made up of roughly 80 islands that stretch 1,300 kilometers. The islands offer scuba diving at coral reefs, underwater caverns, and wrecks such as the World War II era troop ships, SS President Coolidge, hiking trails ascend active volcanoes such as Mount Jessur. Other popular activities include rainforest, eco-tours, kayaking, and deep-sea fishing, plus relaxing at resorts and spas on the white sandy beaches. Beautiful scenes, beautiful. It was settled more than 3,500 years ago and was visited by the legendary explorer James Cook in 1774. If you decide to visit the island, you can explore beautiful beaches and waterfalls, snorkeling and scuba diving, and you can also scuba dive shipwrecks, which is unique. And that is something beautiful. We've done it once. To go into a shipwreck is just amazing when you go in, when you're doing scuba diving. What beauty you'd see. That the Qudrat of Allah with these ships that are now dumped in the ocean at the bottom of the seabed, and you'd find corals growing, you'd find Allah has created it such a way. You have all these living creatures that are now stuck on the side of this wreck, and they grow there, they live there, it's home to them, and it is just, you know, you when you look at that and when you think, Ya Allah, how is this all possible, and it happens and Allah make it possible. And to do shipwrecks in this particular region must be just unique and beautiful, because there were ships that were wrecked there, and there were quite a few. So to do the scuba there would be lovely to do, alhamdulillah. And then you have the hike at Mount Yasur. You can also eat at exotic and exciting restaurants, because you're going to have the best of seafoods. The best time to travel to the island is between May and October, because of the weather. Now, they're south of the equator, so you have May to October, which is lovely weather. There's many festivals and sporting contests going on between amongst with the people between these months. It will be lovely to go between May and October. So your June, July holidays, when you're going from here, it would be lovely to go with the weather that we have, going out there, and just, you know, it's very much tropical, I would say. So you're going to have lovely weathers there. And it is a Y-shaped archipelago consisting of about 82 relatively small, geologically newer islands of volcanic origin. 65 of them are inhabited, with about 1,300 kilometers between the most northern and southern islands. Two of these islands, which is the Matthew and Hunter, are also claimed and controlled by France as part of the French collectivity of New Caledonia. Vanuatu's total area is roughly about 13,000 square kilometers, of which its land surface is very limited, roughly about 4,500 square kilometers. Most of the islands are steep with unstable soils and little permanent fresh water. One estimate made in about 2005 is that only 9% of land is used for agriculture. The shoreline is mostly rocky, with fringing reefs and no continental shelf, dropping rapidly into the ocean depths. As we see, Comores is about the same because it's volcanic. When the volcano erupts, all that lava goes down into the ocean. It reclaims a bit of land into the ocean. And where it stops, you'll find a steep dip. Now, when you go for scuba, you'd see all these things at the bottom. And you'll find a steep dip with that black rock, that burnt rock. And then you'll see the ocean from the side of it going down further. And that's exactly what it is. When you find that you'll have these volcanoes and these volcanic places, volcanic islands, that's what it is. But lovely. It's something beautiful and amazing. And you'd find how all these fish are also there. They are adapted to that particular volcanic rocks. And they live there. You'll find that they some corals would grow there also. And amazing, beautiful to see that. And there's several active volcanoes in Vanuatu, and several underwater volcanoes. Volcanic activity is common. A nearby undersea eruption of 6.4 magnitude occurred in November 2008 with no casualties, and an eruption occurred in 1945. Vanuatu is recognized as a distinct terrestrial ecoregion known as the Vanuatu Rainforest. It is part of the Australasia ecozone, which includes New Caledonia, the Solomon Islands, you had New Guinea, New Zealand also. The population in close on to 2010 or so, it's growing annually by about 2.5%, and it's placing increasing pressure on land and resources for agriculture, grazing, hunting, fishing. Some 90% of the households fish and consume fish. So it's a fishing island and a fishing country, and they live off fish also. And there's intense fishing pressure that was caused there, but people live off it. And, you know, Allah just provides, and fish just come through. The climate is tropical, with about 9 months of warm to hot rainy weather, and the possibility of cyclones, and 3 to 4 months of cooler, drier weather characterized by winds. The water temperature is plus minus 22 degrees Celsius in winter, and cool between April and September. The days become hotter and more humid starting in October. The daily temperature raises from 20 degrees to about 32 degrees Celsius. And it's about the best weather to go to. From 20 to 30, that is the weather we have here all the in our summers also. So lovely. So it's the best time to go then. And it has long rainy seasons with significant rainfall almost every month, The wettest and hottest months are June through to November. Rainfall average at about 2,360 millimeters per year, but can be as high as 4,000 millimeters in the Northern Highlands. Alhamdulillah, so you have lovely fresh water there also. Then you have Kiribati. Kiribati, the capital is South Tarawa. The continent it's placed on is Oceania. Now we know Oceania is above, just above Australia. The population is about plus minus 120,000 people. It used to be formerly called Gilbert Islands. Then you have the points of interest, which is the Embo Lagoon Club. Then you have Te Umanimbong. And the official language is English and Kiribati. Kiribati, an island republic in the Central Pacific, comprises of 33 coral atolls. Now, when you go into Australia or New Zealand, you can just hop off. You can fly across on that side and you can go to Kiribati. You can visit Kiribati, even if it's for a day or two, like I said. You are going all the way down there, visit Kiribati, and you would find that, you know, it would be a country that you can just visit and just see and put it on your list as I've been there. Those tourists that go out there, I know what it's like. Or you have a bucket list on the one side, and you have a done list on the other side. And alhamdulillah, you try to fill the done list quicker than what the bucket list can get filled. Now, as we go along and we see more of these countries that you add to your bucket list, try and square it up on the other side with the done list, if you can. And these are all small countries, island countries and small countries that you should visit, and which will go off your bucket list. And put it in your bucket list, and I think you will really have a good time. And, you know, when it comes to the Kiribati itself, you have the capital, as I said, is South Tarawa. Now, with lagoons and white sandy beaches, many of its islands are in uninhabited, and it's offering a remote setting for fishing, diving and bird watching. The crowded capital, which is South Tarawa, made up of small islets, retains remnants of World War II battles fought on its shores, and it is known for folk dancing and handicrafts. Kiribati has an impressive population of over, as I said, about 120,000 people plus minus. The weather is naturally hot all year round, so you have to take your sunscreen, drink lots of water, and if you are on the beach, just to cool you down, you can just chill out there, relax. Those who have a passion for exploring and discovering, people who like an adventure off the tourist trails to places where few have been before, and people who want to understand a country, not just see it, Kiribati will challenge your view of how life should be and how you are a less complicated way of living, where family and community come first. And that's what we want in life. Family, community, that old style of living that we had in South Africa, in the Indian areas, in the Indian townships. That is what you would probably find when you go to Kiribati. It has been inhabited by Micronesians speaking the same oceanic language since sometime 3000 BC already. And the area was not isolated. Invaders from Samoa, Tonga and Fiji later introduced Polynesian and Melanesian cultural aspects, respectively. Intermarriage tended to blur cultural differences and resulted in a significant degree of cultural homogenization. The Kiribatians converted to Christianity under the influence of the British, and later American missionaries came in to convert them to Christianity. Some of the islanders follow Islam, while others are Baha'is. And all you do is you pack your clothes according to the season. Since it is a tropical country, no warm clothes are needed. Cool cotton clothing will do, because it becomes humid also. Make sure you carry your sun protection because of being on the island. And you have your sunglasses, whatever, suntan lotion, whatever you may take that with you. It may be a good idea to carry some basic medicines for diarrhea and fever. Mosquito repellent is a must when you go there. Citizens of countries that have diplomatic relations with Kiribati don't need visas for a stay of up to about 4 months. In all probability, there won't be a Kiribati embassy in your country to apply, so rather go to the British consulate or directly to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Kiribati. Apply and you'd get there. You won't have a hassle to go in. That's not a problem. Change your foreign currency in the capital, Tarawa, because outside of it, you'll have a rough time to change your currency. It will be difficult because of the way the country is situated. Traveler's checks are issued in Australian dollars and are most widely accepted and easily converted into cash. Tarawa is a very interesting capital of Kiribati. It is not one town, but a group of islands surrounded by coral atolls, and you need a boat to get from one part of town to the other. That is the town itself. So it's, you can imagine, you want to go to another part of town, you get into a small little boat and you go across to that town, or to that part of town. How beautiful is that? That is peace living. That is comfortable living. And you know what? That is something which I would say, it's just, you can enjoy that. You can really, really enjoy a holiday like that. Then you can also, Kiribati, or they call it Christmas Island, is the largest coral atoll in the world with many lakes and ponds, and is home to a great many birds. There are large coconut plantations, fish farms, and a solar salt producing plant. It is being developed as the economic center of Kiribati. You can fly to Kiribati via Suva, which is in Fiji, or Funafuti in Tuvalu, or directly from Honolulu, coming from the other side. Or if you're coming from the Australian side, you can fly up from Fiji and up that way also. There are two international airports in Kiribati, at Tarawa and Christmas Islands. Goodbyes to take back home from Kiribati holiday includes baskets, table mats, fans, cups made from screw pine leaves and coconut fronds. Jewelry made from seashells and coconut shells make inexpensive but charming souvenirs, as do models of Gilbert Island canoes and houses. Many of the islands have been almost completely destroyed by phosphate mining, and still others are off limits, having been subjected to nuclear tests conducted by the British. Eat out at one of the many cafes and restaurants serving local cuisine, and try local specialities, where they have a special type of a fruit salad, and it's served with some fine coconut, with a side dish of onions and coconut cream, spiced with curry powder, wrapped up in taro leaves and steamed in a seaweed-covered earth oven. So you have mostly seafood stuff there also. Beautiful, beautiful. So you can imagine how lovely that would be as a holiday of relaxation. Now, we've reached number 4. We've got up to number 20 to go to. We're already out of time. We will continue with the others. We've got, I'll just briefly tell you which countries we have. We have Tajikistan. Then you have Azerbaijan, beautiful as well. I know of people that went to Azerbaijan and went back again, beautiful. Then you have Mayotte, which is also French run. Then you have Nauru. Then you have Burkina Faso, which is also very limited in, has limited knowledge about Burkina Faso. Then you have Ivory Coast. And then you have Tuvalu. You have Andorra, Liechtenstein. You have Palau. You have South Ossetia. You have Futuna, Nagorno-Karabakh, you have the Federated States of Micronesia, then you have the Falkland Islands, and you have Ascension. Those are the 20 countries which we look at. And we've hit number 4. But there's more interesting facts as you come to Tajikistan. There's more interesting facts when you come to Azerbaijan. There's so much to do. We'll try and get somebody in who can talk to us also about Azerbaijan itself, where the country itself is a destination of choice, how beautiful that country is. Also an oil-rich country. What beauty it has. I've seen pictures of Azerbaijan. I haven't been there myself, but beautiful. So we'll see what we can do there. We're already out of time, inshallah. Lovely weather. If you are doing nothing on this long weekend, you haven't, or you're just chilling out at home, take it easy, relax. Just watch out on the roads. There's a lot of cops and there's lots of roadblocks on the roads. Be very, very careful if you're going out of town or whatever it is. Just be very careful when you're on the roads, especially when it comes to these holidays. You'll find all these drunken drivers and so on, which, you know, it's unfortunate. We try to take as much care as possible, but when it comes to these drivers, it becomes difficult, and it's not our fault, but we get into a problem with that. Accidents and so on, which is sad. So be very careful, and also all those that are going to the Istima today also, today, tomorrow, going for the duas also, inshallah. Remember us in your special duas, and take it easy on the roads, look after yourself, and also the weather. If you are just chilling out at home, relax. Lovely weather just to have that popcorn at home. Just chill out and relax, inshallah. Take it easy from myself, Muhammad Lambat. Until next week, same place, same time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.